Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, many years ago, during the first several years of my practice, I was working with a family whose teenage daughter was getting into all kinds of trouble. She was running away. She was doing drugs. She was skipping school. And mom had remarried a couple of years earlier, and she'd moved with the daughter to a new home in a new city that was about an hour away from where the girl had grown up and all her friends were. So I knew immediately what was going on. And at that same time, I also flash back to when I was 16 and became part of a quote-unquote new family of my own. And I'm going to age myself here, because despite growing up in the age of the Brady Bunch, for those of us old enough to remember that show, creating a family from two separate households and disparate people is much more difficult than it looks. So to talk about the do's and don'ts of this process, I'm joined by Dr. Patricia Papernow. She's a National Step Family Resource Center senior training faculty member, who knew there was such a resource center, and she's also the author of Becoming a Step Family and Surviving and Thriving in Step Family Relationships. So Dr. Papernow, Patricia, thank you so much for coming on and talking about this incredibly important topic, but also one that we don't talk about very much.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be here.
You know, it's, you know, and as I said, I'm one of the people that we're going to be talking about today, even though it's many years in my past. But you shared you did a video for the Psychotherapy Networker, and you talked about the different experience that adults and children have when they're creating a step family. So, you know, because we all kind of think that everybody's the same, but they're not. So what are these differences specifically between the adults and the kids?
Well, I think, first of all, that language blended family sets up the expectation of that we'll all be one, and it certainly captures the wish that we would all be one. But what is happening when the adult couple gets together is that adults are thrilled. If you've been alone or in a bad marriage, it's wonderful to find somebody that you love and feel loved by. It just feels terrific. And the adults often really want to move forward. The dilemma is that kids experience this new family very, very differently than the way adults do. In fact, for many kids, the transition into a step family is harder than the transition to divorce. And as the rate of change goes up, child well-being goes down. So often the adults are really just hot to trot, and the kids need lots and lots of time.
Well, and I know I've noticed one of the things that people run into and I think is very confusing. And a lot of times it's the kids may actually like their parents' new partner, or as long as they're like boyfriend and girlfriend.
Exactly, until something really real happens. And that isn't always true, but it often is, yes.
Yeah, I mean, and I've had couples come in and it's like, well, I don't understand. Because Susie liked Jim. And I'm going, yeah, because Jim wasn't now telling her what to do. I mean, you know, I had this very same experience with my stepfather, because he was trying to tell me what to do. And I was like, oh,
well, you've just,
no.
You've just touched on something. But let's back up one second. It's important for the adults. I just want to finish really laying that out for you, because it was such an important question about how are kids experiencing this differently from adults. For adults, the new relationship is a gift. Mm-hmm. And for kids, it's often another loss. And the way that I explain it to adults is, what happens to you when you fall in love? You know, you turn towards that person and light up, and you accidentally turn away from your child. Plus, all of the change, we were just talking about that 16-year-old, another whole round of changes. The first of which is to have a new adult in the household. That's a change. That mm-hmm. person has kids. That's a ton of changes. If you move, that's a whole change. If you move schools and neighborhoods, that's a huge amount of change. And change is hard for kids. And then the other thing is what we call loyalty binds. If I care about my new step-parent, I am being disloyal to my parent. And these loyalty binds seem to be almost genetic. They seem to happen even in cooperative divorces. However, if there's tension between the adults, loyalty binds are unbearable for kids.
Well, and that's especially true if one parent did not want the divorce and is still suffering, and then the other parent
is still suffering and letting the kid know about it.
Oh, yes.
You can suffer and not tell the kid, or you can suffer and, as one kid said to me, she leaks.
Well, and I think that's also something that adults don't fully grasp, is that children, and this actually starts when kids are really, really young, and I don't think they really lose it. They are really aware of the undercurrent. Because I've had people tell me, oh, my kids don't know we fight. It's like, that's what you think.
And then you ask the kids.
Right.
And what the kids say is, we sense it,
mm-hmm.
or the mom or dad will say, I never say anything bad about my son or daughter's other parent, and the child looks and says, right, you leak.
Right, yeah, their eyes
and
are
leak
wide
would,
going.
Leak would be, when if I ask, what do you mean? Well, you know, I want to go out to dinner, and mom says, dad didn't give us enough money.
Yeah.
You know, that's leaking.
Or one of the things that I tell my clients is that, you know, when you get off the phone with them, do not roll your eyes, do not sigh, do not, I mean, any, because
mm-hmm.
a lot
That's
of times
right.
they'll say, I don't say anything. It's like, well, maybe not with your words, but your body
with your
is
body.
Screaming.
Yep.
And,
yeah. And it turns out it's not just, you know, screaming and yelling that's hard for kids. Moderate tension.
Mm-hmm.
Between the adults impacts kids' attention. It impacts their academic achievement, and it actually compromises their immune systems. And it does all those things because tension, moderate, even moderate tension between adults that a child cares about impacts sleep. It compromises
yes.
sleep, and that impacts all the rest of it. So kids really need, it's not divorce that's so bad for kids, it's conflict.
Right, and that's what a lot of the studies have shown. And conflict, like you said, isn't necessarily yelling and screaming, although that
exactly.
definitely is. But conflict
right.
can be, you know, the silent treatment. It can
exactly.
be all those other subtle, what parents think are being subtle. And like
right.
the kids are like, you guys are walking around with spotlights on you.
Right.
But nobody ever, one of the things that gets to me is that nobody ever asks the kids. Everybody says, oh, the kids will be okay, or the kids will be better off. And there's a lot of assumptions. And, you know, I tell people, yeah, kids can survive car wrecks too, but we don't purposely drive into a wall.
Right. Well, kids will get through divorce pretty well if
yeah.
the adults protect them from conflict and if their parenting stays what we call authoritative, both warm and moderately firm. And in
mm-hmm.
fact, kids in divorced families whose parents are not in conflict, whose parents are cooperative, are doing better than kids in never divorced families where the conflict level is high.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, so and a lot of this is well documented. Unfortunately, I'm not quite sure how well disseminated it is or
better than the information about step families.
Well, that's probably true. That's probably
42% of Americans have a close step family relationship, and yet there is so little good information out there. There are tons of blogs. There's a ton of wonderful research, but most of it hasn't even been shared with clinicians. There's only been two clinical books in the last 25 years, mine and one other one.
Wow.
And nothing else, and people don't get trained.
Well, And because I think a lot of people think about this as just another relationship, because I've actually written a book myself, but it's kind of a how-to for marriage. And after I wrote the book, my editor said, "Where's the chapter on step families?" And I went,
right.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's a whole other book.
Okay. Well, but at least I've got a chapter in there.
Right.
But, you know, it is so challenging. And with the number of people or number of marriages that end, and, yes, it's not as high as 50%, so everybody needs to let go of that figure, but it's high enough. And, you know, the idea is many of these people will meet somebody new and want to do it all again. And the biggest challenge is, you know, what to do with the kids. And in this video, you specifically mention the children's sense of loss. And, you know, you talked about the sense of loss in many ways, but what's going on in terms of, or, you know, the sense of loss in gaining a new family? I mean, on some level, one would think that might be a positive thing.
It is often positive for the adults, especially if, you know, you're getting a new lover out of it. For kids, it's a lot of change.
Yeah.
And for kids often lose the attention of their parent. So one of the things that I talk about is that part of what happens in a step family that's different from a first-time family. In a first-time family, the children come in hardwired for attachment to both mom and dad, to both the adults in the household, and vice versa. In a step family, the attachment wiring is between parent and child. It's not between step-parent and kid. And the step couple may be madly in love, but that's a new attachment. So every time mom or dad turns to his or her kid, the new partner is left out. And every time mom or dad tunes to their new partner, the kid is left out. So there's a kind of almost a competition between those subsystems. We call those subsystems in clinical theory. So one of the things that I say is spend one-to-one time. If the adult couple in a stepfamily does need time alone together, so do parent-child relationships. Time alone where the parent is fully focused on the kid, where the kid doesn't have to compete for mom or dad's attention. And step-parents and step-kids also need some time alone without the parent present to begin to get to know each other, do something fun. You know, maybe this is a kid who wants to learn how to hit a baseball or loves to play basketball, and neither mom nor dad does basketball, and you know, step-parent can play basketball, take the kid to a game. Or, you know, maybe the kid wants to learn how to bake and step-mom or step-dad bakes. And, of course, there's the other way around. Adults really need the technical skills of kids. You know, teach me, my stepson taught me how to get on Twitter.
Right.
You know? You get a technical problem on your computer, you need a 14-year-old.
Absolutely.
So one-to-one time helps that quite a lot.
Something that you were talking about brought up something that happens, I think, in a lot of families or step families, and I'm not exactly sure why this comes as a surprise or why it can't just be accepted as an is, where, you know, I'll get one partner will say, "Well, my partner treats their kids differently than he or she treats mine."
And
of course, my response is, "Well, yeah. Why is that?"
I think where you have to start with is what parent wouldn't want. What parent wouldn't want your new partner to feel the same way about your child that you do? Doesn't make sense that we'd be longing for that?
But it's not realistic.
It's painful. It may not be, but I think we first have to at least start with understanding the longing, you know, that of course we would want somebody close to us to feel the same way about our kids that we do. But the dilemma is, it's called, Mavis Hetherington calls it ownness. You know, kids love their parents better than other adults, and parents love their kids better than other adults do. And it's a little hard to live with up close, you know? But it's helpful to know that that's normal. It doesn't mean that a step-parent is failing if they don't aren't in love with your kid the way you are. Besides which, if kids are having a hard time, kids need their parents, not their step-parents. And if kids are having a very hard time, if a kid has a lot of loss or really intense loyalty bind, say the parent in the other house is having a very hard time, that kid cannot connect to the step-parent. And so being in a household where a kid doesn't say hello to you is very, very difficult. And that kid is very likely not to be able to say hello to you if you're the step-parent. And that's hard. So step-parents need a lot of support from their partners. They need their partners to get it.
Well, and then I do think that this does set up some tension, because one of the things that I hear relatively frequently is, you know, they have to respect the step parent, you know, and I'm like, okay, yes, on some level I understand that, and I'm going back to my 16-year-old self who was in no way, shape, manner, or form going to respect my
Well, you've hit something that I have a little star next to on my little list of things to talk about. We actually know quite a lot about what works and what doesn't with parenting, step-parenting, and discipline in step-families. And one of the things we know from the research is that parents need to retain the disciplinary role. That limit setting needs to stay in the hands of the parent until or unless step-parents have created a built a caring, trusting relationship with step-kids. And at that point, step-parents can slowly move into what we call authoritative discipline, which is warm and firm. What's really clear in the research is that authoritarian, hard and firm discipline by step-parents is toxic. And it is the style that most step-parents are pulled to, because kids are irritating, and kids that aren't your kids and aren't saying hello to you are very irritating.
Right. But as the parent of now two grown children, I tell people I don't have children anymore, I have adults. Your own children can be just as obnoxious and not say hello to you. So, I mean, it's
Your own children cannot be obnoxious and not say hello to you. However, and it's painful. However, you have a history with them.
Right.
You have a history of solid attachment with them. And you have a history of shared understandings about how we do things. With a step-parent does not have that history.
I'm so glad that there's research, because one of the things that I have said, and maybe this is a slightly off the research, is that you can't, as a step-parent, you cannot parent a child without that child's permission.
And I think you're exactly right. So what I say to step-parents is the guideline is connection before correction. Concentrate on connection. And that's hard if a kid is not available, but oftentimes one kid is more available than others. Concentrate on relationships, not rules. Concentrate on getting to know the kid. Concentrate on being interested. And if the kid doesn't answer questions like, how was school today, notice things about them. Gee, I noticed you took out the trash. Great. Looks like that was a tough math test. Sorry. Heard you did a great, great job at basketball today. Do things that build relationship and make connection.
I love that. This is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with author and National Step Family Resource Center, that's a tough word, that's a whole tough sentence, faculty member, Dr. Patricia Papernow, about the very real challenges presented by trying to blend families. And if this is something you're facing, I invite you to take a moment and send me an email or give me a call and find out how you can successfully negotiate this potential minefield to your happiness and marital success. You can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. Or you can send me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. And I want to get back to this really important topic, and we've been talking a little bit about some steps the adults can take in making this process better for the children. And one of the things that I recommend, and maybe I'm completely off track, is to give the children opportunity to talk about stuff. I remember I was never asked. I was never consulted. About whether or not I wanted this other person in my life. Now, I realize he made my mother very happy, but I was not a happy camper about this whole thing. And, nobody bothered to ask me if I wanted a new family.
Right. And, in fact, it's not really up to the kids whether you have a new family. However, two things. One is the adults have to slow way down, and it's hard. If you're excited and you're really, really wanting to move forward, it is hard to slow way down. It's really hard. You know, you want to bring everybody together and put everybody, and in fact, kids need a lot of time. And they do need to talk about what is this like.
Mm-hmm.
And if kids are, quote, not behaving, they're probably saying this is hard. And somebody needs to reach in and say, wow, looks like this is hard for you. Tell me more. And listen. Now, what we know is most regulating for kids, and this is true for grown-ups also, is somebody who gets it.
Right.
However, that is easier said than done. Really where we started this conversation, a kid says, Janie says to her dad, I hate Claire. Claire is her new stepmom.
Uh-huh.
And what she needs from dad is, boy, sounds like you're really upset. And if he's really got it, sounds like you're really upset and there's a lot of change here. This has been tough. Tell me more. But Claire is daddy's new sweetie.
But
daddy's just as likely to say, but Claire's a nice person.
And Claire likes you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Claire may like her. But it's still really hard to have a new person in your life. And it's one of the reasons I started writing my book. It's the second one, Surviving and Thriving in Step-Family Relationships. I started writing it just for clinicians, and then I realized there is so much stuff out there, but almost none of it is really based in what we know works and what doesn't. So then I went back to the beginning and began writing it for both therapists and people in step-families, because most grown-ups go into this with no map. And a map really helps. It helps a lot.
Well, and I like what you talk about in slowing down, because, you know, one of the things that I've said is I don't know. Now, with the possible exception, now there are some adolescents, teenagers out there who might actually say this to their parents, but most kids aren't going to spontaneously tell their parent, you know, who's over the moon happy, and the kids can see that they're over the moon happy, that the kids aren't happy. They're not going to go, Mom, this is not going to work. I don't want this. Now, I actually did one of my clients, and when she told me this, I just started laughing, and thank goodness the daughter wasn't in the room, because she was explaining to me about how one day she came home and found the hamster, you know, they had a hamster, and it was the daughter's job to clean out the cage, and she found the hamster, you know, remains, you know, in one of her favorite boots and in her bed. And I just started bursting out laughing. I said, yeah, she's kind of letting you know she's upset, isn't she?
Right. Oftentimes what we hear from the adults is that a child is manipulative or resistant. Or what I hear from therapists who don't know anything about stepfamilies is that the child is splitting, which usually to me means the kid needs their parent.
Right, and they're doing some really obnoxious things. And my thing was, I said, she's letting you know she's really angry.
Yeah.
Not in an appropriate way, but I said, she is, you know, I said, I have to give her props for letting you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's very hard. Just it's hard as a parent to not personalize this behavior. And
it's painful.
Well, yeah.
It's painful. I mean, parents are as happy as their unhappiest child.
Mm-hmm.
It's very painful that something that makes me happy makes my kid unhappy. So that's where a map comes in handy. You know, just understanding that it would be normal for my kid to not be thrilled about my new partner. It would be normal for my kid to really need a lot of time alone with me and not to want to spend time with my new partner. You know, that, in fact, would be a good thing as opposed to a bad thing. I think those things help a lot. People read my book all the time and say, oh, my God, I wish I'd read this in the beginning.
Well, and I'm so glad to know that resource is out there because, you know, marriage in and of itself is very, very difficult.
And, right, it's challenging.
And then when you're adding these, I don't know if we want to call them, you know, little landmines.
Challenges. I call them challenges.
You know, that it's really hard to balance just the two people, and then you could have three, four, five, six, and you get sometimes people coming in and out. You get the kids who might not like each other. You get the kids who might not understand why, you know, stepdad's kids get to do X and they have to do
right.
Y. It's mind-boggling that anybody's even willing to...
Well, I think most people don't know what they're getting into. And I think the other piece is because parents and kids are closer to each other than the adult couple is, parents are what I call stuck insiders and step-parents are stuck outsiders.
Uh-huh.
Meaning every time a child comes into the room or to the conversation, a good parent will turn towards his or her kid. And that leaves the step-parent out. So step-parents are outsiders, not only in the parent-child relationship, but there's an ex-spouse relationship.
Oh,
with
yeah.
That are indifferent. And in fact, for kids' sakes, we need to have very cooperative ex-spouse relationships, which means sometimes, mom, you know, one partner is doing something for their ex that the new partner doesn't want them to do, but important to do on behalf of the kids.
Yeah, one of the things I hear about all the time is, you know, the amount of money that goes to the ex.
Exactly. It's painful.
And so it's not available to,
yeah.
You know, the new family. And of course, these are some things that I think couples should be talking about before they get married. And I know how difficult it is when you're in love and you want to build this new life and you kind of want to put any of the potential challenges, you know, in the closet and pretend they're not going to show up. But, you know, it's one thing that I try to tell the people that I work with. I said, you know, number one, don't introduce your kids to somebody until you're pretty sure they're going to be a long-term addition to your life.
Right, and that's way beyond the time when that first flood of neurobiology, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond that time because it feels for sure in the first 3 weeks.
Right.
And, yeah.
And then the
That's
other
good
thing
advice.
Is sometimes you may even have to slow down even further because, and I think that this is one of the things that is so important, is to understand how lost children can be. And so, depending on their
mm-hmm.
age, they may not even know what it is they're feeling.
Exactly.
They just know that they're very distressed.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to step back and go, okay, I want to move forward with this person in this way, but I do have this prior obligation to my child to slow this down.
Well, and here's another way to put it. A step at a time saves nine. That
mm-hmm.
rushing ahead actually doesn't make things go faster. If you're going faster than a kid can go, kids are going to let you know, and it won't be pretty. If you can slow down, and some kids, you know, a kid in a very intense loyalty bind, a kid whose other parent is very, very upset or negative about the new relationship or about mom or dad, that kid's going to take a long, long time. That kid may not ever really be able to hang out with the whole family or may need a lot of one-to-one parent-child time. But I think it oftentimes you're exactly right. It sometimes you've got to sort of put the brakes on and go back to one-to-one parent-child time.
And
lots more of it.
And again, not looking at your child as being manipulative. It's possible that they are being manipulative.
Well, here's my definition of manipulative.
Oh, good.
A child is doing something. A child is not able to get what they need directly, either because they don't believe mom or dad will get it, or because they don't have language for it, or mom or dad can't help them find language for it, so they're doing it indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so dad and his new wife are snuggling on the couch, and, you know, the daughter comes and sits between them. Well, stepmom might call that manipulative. Daughter might call that, I need my daddy, and I don't really want to watch you snuggle. It's too painful for me.
Well, and I think that that's a really important thing because, you know, I both talk about, well, we're all manipulative. We all want what we want when we want it. It's just a question of whether or not we can get it. And I don't necessarily think it's helpful to put negative labels onto things and to kind of try to take more of a position of curiosity, like you're saying. It's like, well, what is it that my child is trying to tell me?
That's lovely.
Can I step back and try to see this through my child's eyes? Because and people think, oh, well, when we, you know, getting divorced or whatever when my kid is in high school is better than when they're three. And I'm going, actually, no, it's not. Because, you know, when they're in high school, the last thing they want is their lives disrupted. And
especially the last year or just after they go off to college.
Right, and that's what a lot of people do. It's like, oh, well, wait till they go to college. I'm going,
wait till
don't.
The first summer. Let them launch, because they need to launch. You're exactly right. They need to launch without looking back. And if they launch and mom and dad divorce, they have to look back. They can't look forward and root themselves in their lives. If you need to get divorced, wait till the summer. Wait till the, you know, second or third or fourth or fifth week of the summer, so kids have a chance to come back and then a chance to process before they go.
Well, so I want to ask you one last question, which probably is it's an important question. So what can children do?
That's an interesting question. What can children do? Say some more about that. That's an interesting question.
Because they can get caught in a bind. They want their parent to be happy, but they're not happy. And, you know, maybe they feel like nobody's really listening to them. I mean, before a kid goes into, I mean, yeah, if a kid starts misbehaving, they'll get their parents' attention. And, you know, but maybe there are some of us who don't want to do that. But, you know, but how can kids let their parents know it's going too fast? How can kids, you know, go, Mom, I'm not ready, or Dad, I'm not ready for this?
I think kids often need the help of adults to say those things.
Okay.
You know, because, you know, if you've got an attuned parent and the kid says, Mommy, this is too fast, that parent's going to slow down and look. If you've got an unattuned parent, you're probably not going to even say it to them if you're a kid, because you're not going to get
hurt. Yeah, I think that's part of the dilemma.
Yeah.
So, in other words, what you're basically saying is that the adults need to learn a whole heck of a lot more about this.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I can't tell you how many people read my book, and Surviving and Thriving, the second book, and call me up or email me and say, oh, my God, I wish I'd known. I wish I'd known.
Okay. So how can we let them know right now?
The book is Surviving and Thriving in Step-Family Relationships, What Works and What Doesn't. It's easy to find on Amazon. And it's the designer laid it out beautifully, so you don't have to read the whole thing cover to cover. You can pick and choose your spots. And it's full of information, and all of the research is put into the back. So there's enough research for you to know that what I'm suggesting is rooted in the research, but you have to wade through a whole mess of it if you're not interested in it.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
And is there any other place they can find information from you?
You can go to my website. If you Google my name, Papernow, Patricia Papernow, there aren't very many of me. Because I'm the only one I know. You'll get to my website. It's stepfamilyrelationships.com, but it's easier just to Google my name. You'll get to it.
Well, terrific. Because no matter how friendly a divorce is, it's a disruption not just for the spouses, but for their friends and family as well. And this is especially true if there are any children involved. And while the exes may go on to create new lives and find new love, the children often experience it quite differently. And everyone deserves to recover from the disruption of a divorce. And it's important to remember that this doesn't happen in the same way or in the same time frame for everyone. And creating a new family is a major step that deserves, as you've heard today, to be taken carefully and slowly. And it probably won't be as smooth of a process as you would like to think. But it can happen. And so I hope you'll keep listening to the show, to wonderful guests like I've had today. And until next week, stay loving.